Okay, today's daf is Kuf Vav. We're going to start a Kuf Hei on the bet at the bottom. Hamakabel Sadeh, we're starting with the Mishnah. We're continuing with all different types of sharecropping. I noticed, by the way, the Koran had a good word for the chocher. He called him a cultivator. Okay. Thought that was a good name. We can try to use that. Hamakabel Sadeh Mechavero V'achlach Chagav O Nishtifa. Okay, so now what happens? You get a field, and we're talking here about chachirut, okay, and cultivating. Get a field to cultivate, and grasshoppers came and attacked it. Or nishtifa, which means that the wind came and blew all the seeds off, basically, before you could deal with them.
This is blasted.
Right, wind blasted. Im makat medinahi, if the whole area is affected by this, minakelo min chachuro, then he can deduct this amount from what he owes him. Remember, the cultivator pays a set amount, no matter what happens. So now, in this case, he's allowed to deduct. Obviously, if he's an aris, where he's a sharecropper and he gets a percentage, and obviously he's going to get a percentage of whatever there was. In this case, if there's a certain amount of loss, then he's allowed to deduct percentage, you know, come up with an amount, how much he can deduct. What's interesting is they don't discuss how he calculates what amount to deduct.
I see that was coming.
Right. No, it's not actually. Im eina makat medina, but what if it's not, and it's just this field, let's say, ein menakelo min chachuro, then he's not allowed. Rabbi Yehuda omer, im kiblahe menu b'ma'ot, ben kacho ben kach eino menakelo min chachuro. Now, what does a cultivator get? What does he pay? He pays a set amount, generally, of crops. But if he agreed to pay the guy, he pays a certain amount of the crops. Now, it's a certain amount rather than a percentage, right? The aris pays a percentage. He pays a set amount. And the third option is, what if he just pays money? Okay, if he just pays money, then we're going to treat it differently, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, if the amount he's supposed to pay is money, then the makam medina has nothing to do with any of this. And then he still has to pay the money. But if he's paying in crops, even though in theory he could pay from crops from the shuk, he still gets to deduct the amount.
There may not be crops in the shuk if it's in...
Right, there may not be crops in the shuk at all either, right? Depends what happens and
that it may be
how it's affected.
Is he's got money, cash, and savings somewhere, which is
right,
as immediately
can use something.
Affected by this.
Right. Or I think also the assumption seems to be, since it says minakelo, he can deduct it. It sounds like some crops grew and then the rest were ruined, which means that he has some. The question is, does he have to pay all of that to the owner? Hechidami makat medina. Now we're going to have a machloket. What does this mean, makat medina? Does it mean medina? Does it mean region? You know, medina could be state, area, country, region, section. Okay, so we're going to have a machloket, Rav Yehuda and Ula. Amar Rav Yehuda, kigon de ishtuf ruba de baga. It means that the most of the valley was affected, which means not the whole medina, just the area. Ula Amar, even more, you know, more actually, including more cases, he says, kigon shenishtifu arba sadot me'arba ruchotah. If there's four fields, one on each side around him, if he's surrounded by fields that got wind blasted, then it's okay. Then basically he can claim this is a makat medina. Amar Ula, ba'u b'ma'arava. So now Ula says, based on his explanation, they asked in Eretz Yisrael, right, Rav Yehuda's in Babel, so they have the Babel Shita. Here's the Eretz Yisrael Shita, and they asked all these questions. Now it happens we don't paskin like Ula. So all these questions in the end are somewhat irrelevant, because we paskin like Rav Yehuda, that it has to be the whole area. But according to Ula, they're going to ask a whole slew of questions, which again, they're not going to come up with an answer to. Nishdav telem echar al pnei kula, mai. What if there's a whole furrow that gets ruined, like a whole long section from start to finish, but not, right, like let's say on all four sides, but not the whole field? What do you say? Nishtayer telem echar al pnei kula, mai. What if everything's destroyed except that there's an entire furrow that's not destroyed? Afsika bira, mai. What if there's my field, and then around it, there's dead fields, you know, fields that weren't grown at all, that were just laid fallow. And then around that are fields that were planted but got ruined. So can you say that's for Arba Ruchotah? Or do we mean Arba Ruchotah, the four fields that are Tsamud, which obviously wind blasting isn't going to affect them because there's nothing in them to get ruined. Asfastamai, what if the other plants, fields were grown with just hay or fodder? So what do we say about that? Again, you could say maybe they didn't get wind blasted because wind blasts wouldn't affect that kind of stuff. Zera acher mai. What if the other fields had a different type of seed planted in them that also might not have been affected by the wind? Chite legabe se'orim kezera acher dame olo. Let's say you do say zera acher means that if those fields were wind blasted, I'm sorry, my field was wind blasted and those weren't, you could say maybe that's because they planted something different. But what does it mean, something different? Do you say the chitim and se'orim are different enough? Because those might be affected the same way by the wind. Olo. Kol ha'olam kulo b'shidafon, we're the second line on Kufav Amud Aleph. What if the whole world was affected by a shidafon? Okay, obviously there's a bit of an exaggeration, but let's say the whole area. V'shelo b'yerakon. So they were all wind blasted, and his was affected by mildew. So it's not the same plague, so to speak. There's a few different explanations what yerakon is. It either it dried out, it turned yellow. The Koran used the term mildew. Inami kol olam kolo b'yerakon v'shelo b'shidafon, or the reverse. My. So what's the case for all these? Teku. Okay, we don't have an answer, and like I said from the very beginning, we don't actually paskin like Ula, who says it's just the immediate vicinity, if the immediate vicinity around, and we can call that a makat medina. Instead, we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, who says we need the whole region, the whole valley, so to speak, to be affected. Okay, but not the whole region. Makat medina sounds like the whole region, but both of them say it doesn't actually have to be the whole entire region. It could be either the immediate surroundings or the valley that his field is in.
It's like an act of God and insurance.
Yes, an act of God and insurance. Today we're going to see all sorts of interesting theological arguments the Gemara is going to bring for things, which are somewhat surprising and maybe a little difficult to swallow. Amar le, zarachite, okay, we're starting with this one. This is the first. Let's say he says, I'm going to give you my field to plant chitim. Or even, I'm not sure who said, it could be even...
The landowner told the tenant.
Right, okay, the landowner told the tenant, plant chitim. Sounds to me like even if the cultivator said, I'm going to plant chitim, and then he switches, it might also be the same. And in the end, he plants barley. Okay, and then it gets wind blasted. Ruba debaga, though. The majority of the valley gets wind blasted, which is right where Rav Yehuda says, and even Ula would agree. And also, his se'orim got wind blasted. My. What's the halacha? Mi amrina da amrle ilu zarata chite. Could the landowner say to him, had you planted chitim? Oh, sorry, the opposite, right? Could he say, ilu zarata chite havanami mishtefa? In other words, could the chocher, the cultivator, say, listen, whether or not even if I planted chitim, it would have gotten destroyed. So therefore, I want to deduct what I'm supposed to pay you from the stuff that was ruined. Odilma matse amarle, or could the landowner say to him, here comes the interesting theological argument, ilu zarata chite have a mekayim bi vatidzor omer vayakam lach. Okay, what's this pasuk? It's a pasuk from Eov. Again, one of those pasuk from Eov that are quite impossible to understand. The next pasuk there, we're going to see it in a minute. It says, it's like something about ornoga, that light is going to come, a bright light is going to come. But Rashi explains here, what does it mean? Vatigzor Omer, look at Rashi for a minute. Masha tivakesh min hayotzer ya'aseh. Whatever I ask from God, he will do. Vani lo bakashti min hashamayim b'tchilat shana. Sheyatzlicheni b'sorim ela b'chitim. In the beginning of the year, I prayed for this field, I prayed for chitim. So the fact that you planted se'orim could explain why it got destroyed. If you planted chitim, my wishes would have come true. Right? It's a very interesting assumption that just because, right, it's really fascinating here how there's a jump here, right? The assumption is if I prayed, then God would have helped me. And since you didn't listen to that and everything got messed up, that's why my field got ruined. Even though the majority of the valley got destroyed, this guy believes and he could claim it halachically and say, therefore you have to pay me the full amount because I could have been protected by my tefillot had you planted the right thing. Here's the end of the pasuk. We'll get to it in a second. So, mistabra da amrle. So, interestingly enough, what do we say? Which one is it? Seems like da amrle yizarat achite have a makayim bi vatigzar omer bayakam lach. Here's the continuation. Valdrachecha noga or Okay, and therefore he sheds light on your ways, which sounds like God would have basically helped him. So therefore we actually paskin that way, according to this. Nishtefu kol shdotav shel machkir. Let's say all the fields of the landowner, that's the machkir, he's the one who gives it for chachira. So the landowner, all of his fields get ruined. Ve'ish shedufnami ha'bahadayim. And this one gets ruined along with it. Below Ishtadif Ruva Debaga, but most of the valley doesn't get attacked by this plague. My. Mi Amrinan Kevan Delo Ishtaduf, actually not plague, this is the wind. Do we say, Kevan Delo Ishtaduf Ruva Debaga Lomina Kele? Do we say, since most of the valley wasn't affected, therefore we don't deduct? O Dilma Kevan De Ishtaduf Kule Arata, Arate, here's our second theological argument. Matze Amrale, Hai Mishum Letefdi Dahu. This is your bad luck. Deha Mishtifu Kol Stotecha. In other words, look, nothing else is affected except all your random fields around town. So therefore, why should you be blaming me who's working your field? It must be you who owns the field. Okay, so Mistabra de Amrale, it sounds like he could say to him, I Mishum Letai Didach, have a Mishtar Liporta. Okay, here comes the next theological argument, which is, if really it was his bad luck that he caused it, the landowner can claim, okay, if it was my bad luck, imishum latai didi, have a mishtair li porta. My fields would have been destroyed, but a little bit would have been left. How do we know this? Ki dichtiv, like it says on the Yirmiyahu, ki nisharnu me'at meharbe. Meaning that God never totally destroys if he's punishing someone. He leaves him with a little bit of something. So therefore, he can claim, this is so fascinating, he can claim the fact that all my fields were wiped out and I was left with nothing proves that it wasn't the hand of God. So crazy, right? So, and therefore, yeah, you see here, by the way, in both cases, we're siding with the landowner. He gets the benefit of the doubt, which also might have a factor here in terms of what we're saying. Yeah.
That's probably who wrote the Gemara, but...
right, the people writing it, maybe were landowners. Could be. You know, I mean, not all the rabbis.
It's so troubling that you can just pick up a suk.
It's a very difficult suk, yeah.
Very. Right. I mean, that's probably talking about people, but we are left but a few of many. I mean, you can...
Right, it's not talking about stocks of meat.
Right.
I mean, you can probably drag a pasuk to support...
To support anything, yes. Right? They happen to stop here, but the other guy could come back with another pasuk.
Right. It's very troubling.
So you have to question again, as usual... Right, which came first, the drasha or the halacha? In other words, maybe they're bringing psukim from the Torah to support what they're saying. Because I agree that it's quite difficult. I can't remember if it goes across the board, but it could be that all of these, we'll have to check when we get through them all of these are siding with the landowner. And that could be the kav that's, you know, going through this whole sugya is to protect the landowner from, you know, all people claiming, oh, this happened, that happened, that happened, and that's really what we're trying to do, and they're just bringing in these psukim to kind of support it. Or you could say that this sugya, look, we know that there's schools of thought within Jewish thought that do have this attitude of God is behind everything and to the extreme. Right, so that if somebody destroys your field, and you know they can claim, well, you know, you switched on me, and I prayed for this, and since I prayed for it, for sure I would have been protected. And maybe you know this kind of goes along with that theory. It doesn't mean that everybody agrees with this, but it's definitely a difficult theological argument. You know that they're taking halacha based on theology. Okay, let's keep going. We'll see some more cases like this. Not all of them connect, but. Okay. Nishtepu kol shdotav shel chocher. Now, a minute ago, what did we say? That if all the landowner's properties were destroyed, however, no one else's were, right? Then the chocher, the cultivator, can say, hey, it's your fault, because the guy can claim, well, ki nisharnu me'at meharbe, meaning that if God wanted to punish me, right, and that's what this all is, a punishment from God, and therefore you shouldn't have to take a loss, then he would have left me a little bit. The fact that I was totally destroyed shows it wasn't a punishment from God. What if the opposite happens? The person who's a cultivator, he cultivates a bunch of different fields. And bimikre, right, all of his fields get destroyed by the wind. Nishtefu kol shdotav shel chocher, ve'ish shduf ruba debaga, and Most of the valley was wind blasted. And with that, all of his fields. My. Miamrinan, kevan de ishaduf ruba de baga minakele. Can we say that since the majority of the valley's fields were wind blasted, therefore we can deduct, like the halacha says? Or do we say here that maybe there's something else going on? Odilma, kevan de ishaduf kule arate. Matze Amarle, Mishum Letech Didachu. Can the landowner say to him, listen, while it's true that all of the other ones were destroyed, but look at that. All the ones that you were working on were destroyed. Maybe it's your bad luck that caused the fields you're working on to be destroyed. So, Mistabra, okay, Didachu, Dahamashitfu Kostotecha, right? Because all of the fields you were working on got destroyed. Mistabra, Da Amarle, Mishum Letechu. Okay, it seems like he could say, now again, this is siding with the landowner, right? That he could say, it's your bad luck. So now they say, wait a minute, Amai, hachanami neimale, why can't we use the same argument we made a minute ago? Imishum letai didihu, havim shire li porta, to have a makayim be kinish arnu me'af meharbe. So here comes the landowner. He claims to the cultivator, hey, look, while it's true that all the fields in the town got destroyed, specifically every single one that you were working on, because remember, it was just the majority. But Dafka, with you, every single field you worked on got destroyed. That could prove that it's your bad luck. But now what can he counterclaim? He can say, just like the landowner was able to say last time, right? He can say, Kinesharnamath Maharbeh, if it was a punishment from God against me, everything would have been destroyed except for a little something. And here, everything was destroyed entirely, and therefore it can't be me. But you can't use that argument here. Why? Mishum da amarle, he could say to him, if God was going to leave you something, he would have left you something of your own. Remember, he's the chocher here. He's the cultivator. The land doesn't belong to him. He can't say, oh, look, God would have left me something. God would have left him something of his own, not of his fields that he's working on. They don't belong to him. So it's a different, you can't claim the same argument that you did there here, because this stuff doesn't belong to him. This is just stuff he's working on. So you could say, hey, look, it's your bad luck that you brought to all the fields you worked on, and even if absolutely nothing's left from them, we could still claim that it's your fault. Okay. Now, going back to the very beginning, what did we see from the very beginning? The Mishnah said if it's Makat Medina, then the cultivator can deduct, right? If there's some plague that attacks, some wind blast that comes and destroys everything, then what did we say? We limited this, okay? Rabbi Yehuda and Ula had a machloket about how we limit it. But Rabbi Yehuda said it's the majority of the valley, not the whole region. And Ula said it's just the four fields surrounding him. Okay, then we had all these questions with Ula about how could they, what if there's a break in between, different things. But anyway, they both narrowed it and said it's not just the whole Medina. So now we're going to have a question on both of them. Meitive, from a Brayta. Haitashnat shidafon v'yerakon, o shvi'it, o shahayu shanim kishnei Eliyahu, eino olelo mina minyan. Okay, what are we talking about here? This is when it comes to the Shana of Yovel. When you buy Sadeh Achuza, okay, you buy a certain type of field, and you have to give it back after the Yovel. Now, if you sell it, the law is that you can buy it back only after 2 years. You have to have the person you sold it to live there for 2 years before you have rights to buy back the land. Okay, in addition, it goes back to you at Yovel, but you're limited that you can't purchase it within the first 2 years. So now they're going to say, in which cases can we say that those 2 years don't count and we start the count later? That's if the guy didn't actually have a chance to plant the field. What would that be? If it was a shidafon or a yerakon, if there was some plague going on, something that was attacking all the fields. Or it was shnat shmita, where you couldn't actually plant the field. So in those cases, we say, or if they were Shanim Kishnei Eliyahu, what does that mean? There was no rain. Remember Eliyahu and Achav? So if it was years like that where there was no rain anywhere, Eino Olelo Min HaMinyan. So now what are we going to darshan from this source? Katane Shidafon V'Yerakon Dumia Shanim Kishnei Eliyahu. When they say Shnei Eliyahu, it must be that they mean that all the other things in the Mishnah are a Brayta. I assume it's a Brayta. I don't know. I didn't double check. But anyway, all the things in this source must be similar to Shnei Eliyahu, meaning the Shidafon and the Erakon must have criteria that make it like Shnei Eliyahu, which would be what? My Shnei Eliyahu de lo have a tefua klal. There was no tefua on the whole world, right? Everywhere was affected. I don't know how far, but certainly, right? It was far reaching. Okay. Afachanami de lo have a tefua klal. The Shidafon and Yerakon that we're saying don't count for these 2 years of Yovel must be where there was a Shidafon and Yerakon to a very far geographical area. Okay? Aval de'ika tfua salkale. But if there was tfua somewhere, then he's allowed to remove him from his land and buy it back. V'lo ka'amrina makat medina hi. And you can't claim that it's a makat medina. The assumption is that we're going to use the same term makat medina here, even though they don't actually use that word. And the makat medina here means it's very far-reaching. And makat medina by us, Rav Yehuda and Ula both said it's not so far-reaching. So how do you explain that? So now, obviously, what are we going to say? The Yovel case is different because of what it says in the pasuk there. Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzhak shani hatam d'amar kra b'mispar shnei tvuot yimacher lecha. Okay, let's look at the pasuk for a minute. It says, "B'mispar shanim achar hayovel tikne me'et amitecha." Right, a certain number of years after the shnat hayovel, you can buy it back. B'mispar shnei tvuot yimacher lecha. It says shnei tvuot. We're going to darshan this in a few ways. First way we're going to darshan it is it's called a year of tvuah, meaning it has to be a year where it can grow tvuah. So therefore, we're going to call it right. It's only not a shnei tvuah if no one can grow tvuah. Okay, so they're going to darshan it like that. Shanim sheyesh behem tfuah ba'olam. It has to be years where there was tfuah in the world. So if there was tfuah somewhere, then that would be called a shnei tfuah. Whereas by us, it's not the same criteria. Amar le Rav Ashi le Rav Kahana ela me'ata shvi'it ta'alelo min ha'minyan. Da'ika tfuah b'chutz al ha'aretz. If you're going to say the makam dina has to be the whole world, well, then take shvi'it. That doesn't make any sense. It's only forbidden to work the land in Israel. But in other places in the world, it's a shnei tfuah. They can grow tfuah. So Amar Leh, now don't compare shvi'it to the plague, because shvi'it is afkata demalkahi. This is where God is telling you can't work the land. Right? God being the king. They're calling him the king here. Right? And therefore, that's also going to count, because God says you can't work this land. We're going to remove that from one of the years of the counting. Okay? Even though in Chutz La'aretz they do have. By the way, this proves that they do think that Lo'olam means really the whole world, because they're already comparing Chutz La'aretz. So basically we're saying the Yovel issue is an exception to the rule because it's called Shnei Tvuot, and within that exception, it only applies to the Shidafon Yerakon and the Shanim Kishnei Eliyahu. It doesn't apply to the Shvi'i, because that's a whole different thing. Amar Leh Marzucha Berei D'Rav Meri L'Ravina Ela Me'ata Shvi'i Lo Ta'alelo Mina Girua. Okay, so according to what you're saying, now there's another halacha about Yovel. What happens in the Yovel? When you sell your field, you calculate, okay, according to the Torah, if you sell your field in the beginning of the Yovel cycle, you sell it for 50 shekel, I believe, right? 50 shekel kesef. It says it in the pasuk. Okay? Now, if it's after the Yovel, the pasuk says, right, you prorate it based on how many years are left till the Shemitah year, based on this 50 shekel. Now, when they prorate it, they don't deduct the Shemitah year from the counting. According to what we said, if you're buying the field to grow produce, right, then if you can't grow produce on the Shemitah year, so when you buy land X number of years before Shemitah, Yovel, we should deduct however many Shemitah years there are between now and the end and not count those. And we don't, and Alam Atnan, right, and we know, and according to what we're just saying, you should take it, right, it shouldn't count from the years that are left. And what does it say? Alam Atnan, it says in the Mishnah, no tain selu punyon l'shana, and it doesn't take that into consideration. Basically, you pay a selim punyon for shana, which basically calculates to each year, right, based on the 50 shekel amount. So why is that? So Amar Leh, shanei hatam dechazya l'mishtecha ba perei. Even though you can't grow land in the Shemitah year, if you're a landowner, you can still benefit from your trees, because your trees, right, grow from year to year. You don't have to plant anything. When it comes to the 2 years that we're talking about, it says specifically Shnei Tvuot. I told you, we'll darshan this pasuk a few times. The second drasha on this pasuk is that it says Shnei Tvuot. So when it comes to the 2 years that you're not allowed to buy back your land, then it's based on tuah only, and therefore Shemitah year doesn't count. When we're talking about buying back your property and or buying any property and calculating how many years there are till Yovel, until it has to return to its original owner, then we're going to count the Shemitah year because you are getting benefit from the land. It doesn't say there anywhere anything about Shnei Tvuot. It's just about having land. Okay, next thing. If we talk about this Makat Medina now, comes Shmuel and he limits it again. Amar Shmuel. This whole thing, we're getting back to now some theological arguments, where he planted it, this is only when the chocher, the cultivator, actually planted the land, it grew, and then came a grasshopper or any kind of problem, right, and destroyed the property, right, whether the land, the tfuah, whether it was the wind or whatever it might be. But if he never planted the land, let's say, he didn't bother. He didn't plant seeds or anything. And then came this wind blast, affected the whole area. All his work would have been for naught, right? But instead, he didn't do any work. Now he claims, listen, I don't owe you the cultivating costs because, it doesn't really matter whether I planted or not, but had I planted, it all would have been ruined. So you can't claim that, okay? You have to pay then anyway. Da'amarle, because you can say to him, Ilu zarata, had you planted it, have a mekayim bi lo yevoshu be'et ra'ah u'bimei re'avon yispa'u. Right? This is how sometimes the bad doesn't get to people, right? In other words, who's to say that had you planted it, maybe I would have been protected, you know, the landowner can claim. I'm a good man, God would have protected me, and therefore my stuff might have grown, even though nobody else's did or the majority didn't, but maybe I would have been saved. So therefore, he again has to pay. Again, we still seem to be always siding with the landowner, okay? Which we answered before might explain that we don't necessarily have to use these psukim. As this is really the argument. It's that the rabbis are using the psukim to support what the bottom line halacha that they want to get at, the underlying motivation, which is we need to protect the landowner in this case. I think probably the reason to protect the landowner has to do with that the landowner is giving his field to someone else to work. And he's relying on someone to do what they said they're going to do. And you see here that the person might take advantage, he might not work it, he might this, he might that. So it could be that in the end we want to protect the landowner from having other people work his land and destroy it and not do it right. And it's always a little tricky how to prove whose fault and what happened. And could be that therefore the burden of, you know, he gets the better side.
You can make the same argument.
You definitely could. You can make an argument the other way. The labor laws, right? He's a labor, and yes, and we want to protect the poor, and yes, you could definitely make the argument. I'm just trying to argue what could be the motivator for protecting the landowner. Mativ Rav Sheshet. Ro'esh Shahaya. So now we're going to have another question on this. Ro'esh Shahaya Ro'eh Edro. Ro'eh. V'hiniach edro, ubala'ir. We saw this case already, if you remember. The ro'et zon, what would they do? They would get to the city, they would leave their flock, go into the city, get some supplies, and go back. And it was typical that they would leave their flock for a little while. While he left his flock, what happened? Right, ubala'ir. Uba ze'e v'taraf, uba'ari v'daras. Right, so now, ein omrim ilu hayasham hayam atzil. We don't say, if you were there, he could have saved it, for sure, right? So what do we say? Ela omdinoto. We try to evaluate. We assess. Im yachol lahatzil chayav. If he could have saved them and he wasn't with the animals at the time, then what do we say? It's your responsibility because had you been there, had you not left them, you could have saved them. Vim lav, and if he couldn't have saved them, then patur. Vamai, and why is this the case based on what we said before? Neimale, he could claim ihavat hatam. Have a mekayim bi gametari gametadov hikavdecha. Okay, first of all, let's explain where this pasuk comes from. It's from David. When David wants to go fight against Goliath, he says to him, you remember, I was able to kill the lion and the dove, right? I'm the small child, but I was able to kill the lion and the dove. I can kill Goliath, right? So now, you wouldn't have expected a guy like David to be able to kill a lion and a dove, and a lion and a bear. So, what do we say here? Why should this be connected to Omdimoto, whether he could have done it or not? Why don't we just assume that when put in a certain situation, people are able to overcome? You could almost say it's adrenaline, right? It could. Now, the adrenaline argument won't work to compare to our case, but you could understand that in this case, right? That when you're in a situation, maybe you'll get the cough to do anything. Even though, right, normally if you would assess it, you wouldn't think that David would have been able to kill Goliath, but when given the situation, he was able to. So, why don't we say the same thing right? Mishum de amarle. And I think we're still continuing here. One second. No, so this is the question. So now, according to this, what did we say to the chocher, right? We said to the chocher, had you planted it, you would have been able to protect it from this Makat Medina. So even though everyone else got destroyed, right? So why don't we say the same thing here? That it shouldn't matter if the guy leaves his animals. Why don't we say no matter what, you would have been able to do it, even though it was against all odds, right? Because what's the concept here? That God would have helped. It would have been a miracle, right? So why wouldn't we say God would have helped there also with the Ari and the Dove case?
Okay.
Ah, yafes. You could say in some Simchim Alanes. So now, what does he say? It's not what the Gemara says. But Mishum de Amarle, Ihavat Chazi li Itruchash le Nisa, Hava Itrachesh lecha Nisa, Ki Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa. If the, what can he say about the animals? If you thought a miracle was going to happen, then the miracle could have happened even without me. Hava Mitrachesh lecha Nisa. The miracle would have happened to you, the owner of the sheep. What would have happened, right? Not to the Ro'eh. It's not that the Ro'eh would have been so strong, but if you're talking about Nisim, right, they could have said in Simchim Alanes, but he wants to give an even better answer. Even if you want to say the Simchim Alanes, okay, what kind of, how could you say it could have happened anyway? Ki Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa, remember he's the miracle man in Tani, we saw all sorts of miracles that happened because of him. Dematyan Ize Dube Bekarnayhu, that in his story, what happened? The Izim brought the Dubim with their Karnaim. In other words, the Izim fought off the Dubim themselves. So if you had expected a miracle to happen, well, the sheep could have protected themselves. And, the, and as don't say, oh, a miracle could have happened. When it comes to the land, a miracle could have happened. Well, that means the land would have been saved, right? But when it comes to, if he didn't even plant the land, well, then there's nothing to save. So, right, he can definitely claim, had you planted the land, it could have been saved. But here, it's saying, by the way, this isn't so much of Somchim Alanes. It's that, it's actually interesting, it's different. Ein Somchim Alanes means don't put yourself in a situation where you're going to have to rely on a miracle. Don't assume miracles are going to happen. But this is saying, even though you can't assume a miracle can happen, we can always hope that potentially a miracle can happen. And based on the hope that potentially a miracle can happen, we're saying, you're to blame that you didn't even try to plant the field. Because maybe a miracle would have happened. It's a different perspective. So anyway, if you say the same thing with the sheep, had you not left them, a miracle might have happened. You could say, no, even if I left them, a miracle could have happened, just like in the story of Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa. V'nei male, nihi de lenisa rabba lo hava chazina, lenisa zuta chazina. But you could say, right, maybe you can't expect a huge miracle to happen, like Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa. That's a crazy miracle, right? I can even see your faces when I told you the story, right? What kind of craziness, right? But you could see a person fighting off the animals. That's more likely than the sheep themselves fighting off, you know, the gigantic animal. So what's the so then now they say kasha. They say, so then in fact you do have a good question, okay? Which is why don't we say, right? Why do we say there that you couldn't have relied on this? That you can't necessarily rely on a miracle or assume a miracle will happen. Whereas with the land case, we do say it. Okay, so we're left with a question. Tane chada. Pam rishona ushnia zorat v'shlishit eno zorah. So now, what does this say? If you plant and then comes a grasshopper and eats it, you have to replant. Second time and a third. Okay, so the third time you don't have to replant it. So one braita says basically, if you plant right and it comes and gets destroyed, you have to replant a second time, but not a third. V'tani idach shlishit zorah revi'it eno zorah. Another braita says the third time you also have to replant. So if you plant, the assumption is it's still the planting season, right? There's obviously a time frame for planting. If it gets destroyed and you can still, there's still time to replant, you have to do it three times. Does this sound familiar? Right? Lo kasha, why is this not a koshi between the two sources? Ha ki Rebbe, ha ki Rashbag. If you remember this, we're going to see this a bunch more times. Rebbe and Rashbag have a basic machloket about chazaka. Okay, is chazaka two times or is chazaka three times? Right? We always know from our world that chazaka is three times. But there was a machlok at Rebbe and Rashbag, which comes up anytime we talk about chazaka, about whether it's two or three. So we can say the same thing here. If it was muchzak that the chagav is going to eat it already two times, according to Rebbe, that's already going to be a chazaka, and you don't have to therefore replant it the third time. But according to Rashbag, its chazaka is three, and therefore you need a replant. So hake Rebbe damar betrezim nehavi chazaka. Chazaka is with two. Hake Rashbag damar betlatzim nehavi chazaka. Amar Rish Lakish. Loshanu ela shezar avet samcha v'achla chagav. It's only if you planted and it grew and the chagav ate it, then you're going to be patur. Aval, you can be minaked, deduct. Aval zar ave lot samcha. Matze amar lebala karka kol yime zera zar ala. Okay? In other words, it's only if he plants it, it grew, and then it gets eaten. But if he plants it and it didn't grow yet, then the owner can claim, go back and replant. Okay? V'ad emat, until what time can you... Okay, now we have a practical question. When's the end of the planting season, right? We have to always, in halacha, give a time frame. Amara papa ad atu arise midabra v'kaima kina areshayhu. Okay, this is, I saw two different explanations, whether this is around Shvat or Adar, but much later in the season, until the Arisim come back from the land, and as the sharecroppers work the land until the end of the planting season, right, then they let it grow. And when Kima is in the sky, okay, that's one of the constellations, so they're basing this on the constellations, comes right around Shvat Adar. Meitive, but wait a minute, we have a source that seems to indicate that the end of the planting season is much earlier than what you say. Rashbag Mishum Rabbi Meir Omer. Okay, now they're trying to explain this pasuk that appears by Noach. In Bereshit Perek Chet, it says, Od kol yimei ha'aretz, zera v'katsir v'kor v'chom v'kayitz v'choref, v'yom v'layla lo yishbotu. Now there were six terms that described times of year. So they claim that there's six seasons. There's zera, katsir, kor, chom, kayitz, and choref. So now zera is obviously the planting season. So whenever the zera ends, right, that's going to be the end of the planting season. So we have these six seasons, and we have to figure out when exactly the six seasons start. Now, there's a three-way machloket, but either which way you go, they all put it way before Shvat Adar time, okay, which is going to contradict what we just said. So Rashbag Omer Mishum Rabbi Meir, Rashbag Mishum Rabbi Meir Omer, V'chenei Arishum B'Menasi Omer, Kidvarav. Here's the first opinion. Chatzi Tishrei, Mar Cheshvan v'chatzi Kislev. Okay, in the middle of Tishrei starts, that makes sense, right? Right after, right around Sukkot time, a little before, but the middle of Tishrei, Mar Cheshvan, and then Chatzi Kislev starts the rainy season and the planting season. That's Zera, that's planting. Chatzi Kislev Tevet v'chatzi Shvat, the next section is Choref. Chatzi Shvat Adar v'chatzi Nisan Kor, Chatzi Nisan Iyar v'chatzi Sivan Katsir, Chatzi Sivan Tammuz v'chatzi Av Kayitz, Chatzi Av Elo v'chatzi Tishrei Chom. Okay, that's how he does it. Rabbi Yehuda Moneh mi Tishrei. He says, no. The Zera season starts in the beginning of Tishrei. And you can guess where the next one is. Rabbi Shimon Moneh mi Mar Cheshvan. So the question is, does it start in the beginning of Tishrei, the middle of Tishrei, or the beginning of Mar Cheshvan? Either which way, it's going to be 2 months, right? That's going to be a sixth of the year. So either which way, you're going to get weight, right? You're going to end up in Kislev and somewhere around that. Certainly not Shvat and Adar. Man Mekel Bekulu, Rabbi Shimon, right? Who's the most Mekel in terms of why they call him Mekel? That his time of Zera is later than everybody else, right? He's the latest. Vekule Hai Lo Ka'ama, right? And he certainly doesn't get to Adar Shvat. Shvat Adar. So what do we answer? Lo Kasha. Hadikim lemine b'chorfe, hadikim lemine b'afle. Now they're making a distinction between chitim or, or se'orim. Okay, there's different things that are planted in different times. So the ones that they were talking about in terms of the seasons, they were trying to learn that pasuk from Noach, was talking about chitim. But the afle or the se'orim, and those are planted much later. And therefore their season ends in Adar time. Okay, so that's why it's not a contradiction. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, back to our Mishnah. Im kibla mimenu b'ma'ot. Remember we said either you're an Aris, you work for percentages, in which case obviously if there's a Makat Medina, you're only going to get whatever percentage of whatever group. If you're a Chocher and you have a set amount of produce you're supposed to give. So then it depends if it's Makat Medina or if it's not. But if it's Ma'ot, if you agreed to work the land, cultivate the land, and pay a monetary amount, then even if there's a Makat Medina, you're going to have to pay. So here we have a case. Hahu gavra dekabel ara lemizrei bei tume. Tume is shum. We've talked about tuff and shin switching around. Okay, garlic. Aguda de Nahar Malka, on the banks of the river, I guess Malka, Malka Saba, yeah. Bezuze, okay, for money. Istikar Nahar Malka Saba, the river dammed up. Ata lekameh de Rabba, amalei, Nahar Malka Saba lo avi de mischar, makat medina hi. Right, so what does he say? This is an unnatural occurrence. This is going to be called a makat medina. Zil nakele, go deduct it. Amrule Rabbanan le Rava Ha Anan Tanam Rabbi Yehuda Omer and Kiblai Menu B'Maot Ben Kachu Ben Kach Einam Anakelo Min Kachuo. So he says, didn't we just say that if it's money, then you don't deduct it? Amar Lehu Late Dechashle Le Rabbi Yehuda. We don't hold that way. So he actually holds that even though a chocher pays a monetary amount, we still can deduct it from the amount. We don't hold like Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, next case Mishnah Hamakabel Sadeh Mechaviro Ba'Asara Kur Chitin L'Shana. Okay, you get the field for, you say you're going to give 10 kor of chitim for the year. Vilakta, noten lo mitocha. Okay, now, something happened to the crops and they're not so good anymore, but they're there. They exist, the chitim. So he can pay the owner from the bad chitim. We don't say you have to go to the shuk and find better chitim. He says you can pay it from your chitim that aren't so great. Hayu chiteh yafot, let's say his chitim came out better than the ones that they're selling in the shuk. Lo yomar lo haredi lo kach min ashuk. You can't say, well, listen, I'm going to buy the not-so-good ones from the shuk. Give those to you and keep the better ones for me. Ela noten lo mitocha. Okay, so either which way, he gives him, you know, he's allowed to give him bad chitim from his thing, but he's not allowed to go buy bad chitim and give the guy bad chitim when he has better chitim at home. Okay, Gemara, story. Ha'u gavra dekabel ara l'asfasta. Asfasta. Okay, for hay, for growing hay. Bikure desare, and he said, I'll give you a core of seorim. Okay, but he obviously wasn't planning to plant the seorim, right? He said, for a core of seorim, I'm going to take your land and plant hay in it. Avda asfasta, v'charsha v'zara sare. So what did he do? He planted the asfasta, it grew. He plowed and planted seorim, and then lakua seorim. So now the question is, can we say, right, he can give him from the bad ones? So lakuhanisare shalchar Rav Chaviva misura deprat lekamei de Ravina ki agav namai ki lakta noten lo mitocha adame olo. Can we say, look, the sowing went bad, it had a bad crop, but that was what he planted in this guy's property, and therefore he can give him the bad ones? Or do we say no, since he took the land for the asfasta and promised the guy sowing, didn't say I was planting the sowing in your field, then maybe he can't? Amarle. Midame, these two cases are incomparable. Hatam lo avda ara shlichuta demara. In the first case, in our Mishnah, the land didn't do what the guy was sent to do. But in this case, hacha avda ara shlichuta demara. But here, he got his asfasta perfectly fine. And therefore, he has to pay the good seorim, and he can't pay from the bad. Hahu gavra dekabel pardes mechavre. The assumption here is a pardes means a kerem, a vineyard. Otherwise, this case doesn't make sense. He gets a vineyard, be'eser dane chamra, for 10 barrels of wine. Takipahu chamra. Now what happens? So he takes the grapes from the vineyard. He makes wine. The grapes are fine. But then what happens? The wine goes bad. Sabarab kahana lemeimar hainu matnitin. Laktan no tan lo mitochai. He can give him the bad wine because, right, it was what he grew. Right? It was a totsar of what he grew. But Amar le Ravashi, midame. Hatam lo avdara shlichuta. Hacha avdara shlichuta. The grapes were totally fine. It was the wine that went bad. And therefore, you can't compare them. So when the wine goes bad, then he has to pay him with better wine. Umode Ravashi be'imbe dekadum v'sadesha laktaba omarehat. There's a few different interpretations. I'll explain it in the way Rashi explains it, which is that in these cases, what's the case here? Rashi says, invade kadum, those are in anavim that you picked, and then worms got into them. Or omareha means that you put them out to dry, and while they were drying, they got destroyed. So in those two cases, it's like an in-between. It's not yet at the stage of wine, right? So what do they assume here? The assumption is that these two cases, the grapes were in the gut waiting to be trampled on, And then obviously is a case where you didn't leave them too long. Okay, in other words, you did within the right time frame. And the assumption is that both the anavim and the shibboleth, the wheat stalks, they would leave out on the ground for a little while and then they would deal with them. So that since it was still on the ground, even though it wasn't attached to the ground, it still needed the ground for its process of drying out, or I don't know exactly what the process is with the grapes, but that since it still needed the land, that was still considered, it's not like the wine already, which is a much later stage. It was still considered that he could say, listen, they got ruined, so you take the ruined stuff, and emal asot. Now the other question I wondered about this is, are we talking about that these se'orim and these grapes are totally unusable bichlal? Because the wine case, once wine goes sour, we say it's pretty much unusable, although I guess you could use it as vinegar. I guess it could be used as vinegar, so maybe it still has a use. So I guess the assumption is that there's still some sort of use to them, even though they're pretty bad. Although grapes that are hitzliu, not all people say they were hitzliu. Some people say that they had, the other interpretation is that they're still on the ground, but they hadn't yet grown fully or something else. Anyway, we'll stick with that, and we'll stop here for today.